service. Sometimes the way we speak as lay persons and the way the politicians speak, sometimes we confuse and sometimes we change our positions around. Mr. Maskell said that the government collects $500 million, if that's the figure, and he knew how to get it done, and they were bad spending and so forth. And I'm saying, you see, when you bring that figure, I am saying, then the people hear that money. Because in Barbados, I remember Mr. Wynotis from tell Barbados, we have to change the way we do things. And we still didn't listen. And you could take the oil, for example. When he subsidized, when we should be paying for the oil, he subsidized it, and we were left $30 million this last government to pay. I'm saying we got to stick. We cannot say one minute the government is in trouble, they don't have no money, and then another we come and say there's money there, we can pay this and we can pay that and we can pay the next.
I think it is well recognized by the two major political parties. There's only Solutions Barbados that has said they're not interested in their reprofiling. Not so sure where the UPP stands on this, but the two major political parties both recognize, well, you've heard the contradiction, apparent contradiction between one spokesman and the other. But two people who have spoken on behalf of the Democratic Labour Party have said that debt reprofiling is an option to be pursued. The Barbados Labour Party has said that as well. But apart from debt reprofiling, then there's the question of trying to stimulate economic growth in the country. And that's
where... I think Mr. Owen Arthur said that we should have done that, I think, 2 years ago. But for the audience that is listening, please explain what is debt profiling.
Because debt reprofiling has been explained at the beginning of this program. You're rescheduling your debt. You're spacing it out so that you get more time to repay the debt and bring down the interest on it as well. So that's what the concept is. Because our debt, we're paying so much right now in interest that we need to get a little bit of breathing space in relation to that. That's what it's...
Is that different from taking all your debt and going to an agency and say, okay, you take this, handle this, and let me pay you back?
I suppose you would go to an agency to deal with it that way. You're looking, first of all, you're dealing with your creditors, the people that you owe money to. So you're going to them and you say, look, help me out here. There is a body of opinion, though, that we need a bit more than that, because apart from the debt reprofiling, there is still the need for us to get some additional money at lower interest rates. And that is where the discussion revolves around whether we should go to the International Monetary Fund. From the International Monetary Fund, then you will get assistance. Once you get their blessing, then you can go to the Inter-American Development Bank and World Bank and, you know, those agencies to get some additional assistance as well. But none of this comes easy.
Begin to speculate what further austerity measures they're going to put on us.
Well, if you listen last night and you listen to the Minister of Finance, he talked about the SOEs, the state-owned enterprises. There is no doubt whatsoever that there is a need to hear more about what is planned for state-owned enterprises, because we have been around here for long enough to hear the discussion around a report by CARTAC, which is an arm of the IMF, which spoke to the need to have a reform, a significant reform. And we could not, based on what was discussed back then, it implies that there will be job losses from state-owned enterprises. That has not been said on this campaign trail. I will say to you that both the BLP and the DLP need to talk to us about how they would deal with state-owned enterprises, because the fairness of it all is that while I have heard it mentioned by the Democratic Labour Party last night, I have not yet heard, and I need to perhaps search the manifesto more diligently of the Barbados Labour Party to see how we are going to tackle this problem, because you know that a lot of the money from the central government has been going to prop up the state-owned enterprises. So we'll see what happens there. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Pizza, pizza?
You're on the air.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm good enough, sir. What I want to talk about, I hear Mr. Ng say the way the party want the government, and it's so, and it coming so bad. He said he worked Wall Street, but Warren Buffett is a guy who take businesses that are ran down and actually bankrupt and broke and bring them back. You see, so if you read books on profiles of these businessmen, you will see that there are people who are capable of taking business and economies and bringing them back. And we have proved that we can do that.
Okay.
You mean to say I vote Democrat Left Party already?
No. I ain't really getting into the voting pattern, though. Down to brass tacks. Hello? Welcome to the program. And that shooting in Texas, it's at least 8 people reported dead. So it's still counting, you know? I think I saw something here saying that an assistant principal had been held. Assistant principal, a person, or the assistant principal says that somebody has been arrested in connection with the shooting. I think that's what this is saying. It's quoting the assistant principal. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? 4341790. Now, how many of you getting ready for this royal wedding? Meghan Markle to begin procession alone. Hello, down to brass.
Yes, hello, Mr. Ellis. Yes, I wanted you to deal with the National Insurance.
Sure.
Now, basically, you may understand every National Insurance was there terms to one of these things, not the only thing, to pay sickness benefits where you have in case the doctor approves sick leave. Now, I'm getting some disturbing reports that some public officers, after, because you know they're 21, you have 21 sick days. After they pass the threshold of 21 sick days, rather than allow these persons to apply for the national insurance to get sickness benefits, they are then told that they, whether it's certified or uncertified, and they go on all 21, they'll have to repay any monies owed from their salary. In fact, they owe the government money. If they've been paid their salary. And to me, there's a disconnect because my understanding is you should be able, if you pay your claims and government takes out the national insurance, I do not see why a public officer, if they reach the threshold of 21, should be told, all right, that they need to apply for their national insurance sickness benefits. It's simple matter of that. But don't pay the person the full salary and don't notify them. And then come back in lieu of not telling notice that they've gone past the threshold, you are then sending for retroactive payments, telling the person that they need to repay the money because the salary was paid, but you didn't inform the person of the rights that they could have applied for national insurance, even though those contributions were taken out. And that's a paradox. It just does not make sense. It's a contradiction. And it's very disturbing and very troubling as a taxpayer, you know. And as a citizen of Barbados, it's very disturbing. People need to be informed of their rights, you know. There is a customer practice within teaching service that teachers were paid their salaries in lieu of not claiming national insurance. I don't know where the career summary along the line is apparently some disconnect. And now, apparently, some teachers have been paid a salary when they're gone on seemingly sick leave. Dr. Boosick leave only be told that they will have to repay that money because they've gone only 21 sick days. And still, they were not told that they could have submitted claims to the national insurance. So something has gone wrong. I think that the Deputy Chief Office Application for Schools need to come and clear the air on that because this does not make sense. And of course, going to that, the fact that some teachers have been told they've gone over their 21 sick days, and they were not told in
lieu. I assume that the union would take that up and pursue it on behalf of those teachers. There's more than one teachers' union in the country that could deal with that particular matter. And from what you're saying to me, it needs that formal approach. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome to the program.
I've been very scared because I've been getting problems in my phone. I had to unplug all but this one. And it got through.
Okay.
After 10 years, especially last seven, are we going to believe these people, any
ma'am,
one of them?
Ma'am, I don't really want to pursue that discussion. Not in that way. You know, that's nakedly promoting or demoting. And I am not here to encourage that kind of approach on the air. You know, if you want to talk to me off the air, fine. We can have that conversation, but not here. All right? Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Hello, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. This is Stephen Downey here, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, Mr. Downey.
Mr. Ellis, I would like to say I'm very hurt this morning, and I'm very touched by the nasty segments expressed to one of Barbados's most outstanding, distinguished, and respectable gentlemen who can walk anywhere in the international world with pride and dignity, Elliot Dighton Mortley, a man who has done this country pride, honor, and dignity. Mr. Ellis, most people like me and Barbadians have been touched very deeply by the love, the kindness, and generosity by the Mortley family. This is a man, Mr. Ellis, I have had problems in my life. And at my darkest hours, with no money to pay, like many other Barbadians, the Mortleys was always there for me.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We are going to the regional roundup next on Down to Brass Tacks. This is Down to Brass Tacks. The question of debt reprofiling, you've been hearing this term a bit, and I'm sure many people want to get some proper explanation of what it really means. It came up a lot in the case of Greece around 2011, and it is described here as buying time. A heavily indebted country has three options to ease its burden. It can ask or tell creditors to give it more time to repay. Two, it can cut the interest payments on its debts. Or three, it can simply cut the total amount of money it owes. This is referred to as a haircut. This option three is considered to be the nuclear option, the one that policymakers fear will lead to a widespread financial meltdown. Reprofiling would appear to encompass a voluntary version of option one, which is to ask or tell creditors to give you more time to repay. However, unlike the other two options, asking for more time does not in any way make the country's debt load more sustainable. They said that in the case of Greece, all it did was to allow that country to buy time. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You on the air?
Good afternoon, Ms. Ellis. How are you today?
I am well. And you?
I'm not as well as you, but I had a lot of politics thing with me today. I'm dealing with this, the Anglican Church and this.
Yes.
Bishop and the laity and the thing. I read in the paper where a guy was saying that the age of 45-year-old bishop is a better one than a 60-year-old bishop. I don't know how he can reach at that conclusion, but I believe a 50-some-year-old prime minister is better than a 60-some-year-old one too.
Well,
so if you want it,
you can't
want it in the glass name bottle too.
You notice that in Malaysia they just re-elected a 92-year-old man to be prime minister. 92 years.
But probably them might know where them stand up. But in my opinion, I more prefer the younger person. If the bishops want the younger person, why don't somebody more want a younger prime minister?
Well, I don't know that I'm going to get caught up in linking the choosing of a bishop to the choice of a prime minister in Barbados. I think that everything must be judged on merit. And what is happening in the Anglican Church, from where I sit, is quite unfortunate, because it doesn't send a very positive message to the rest of the society. The Anglican Church has long had a pivotal role to play in Barbadian society. There's a lot that's happening in this country today that, when you look at it, it appears as though the Anglican Church has for too long ceded territory to the emerging evangelicals, who speak with a high degree of fervor and energy and give the impression that they are more powerful than they really are sometimes. I mean, mm-hmm. how powerful you are depends upon who's listening to you and what influence those people have as well. So the Anglican Church does have some work to do, and it is really, really unfortunate to see how their politics is playing out. You know, there seems to be a degree of intransigence on both sides. That's how it appears to me. And the kind of compromise that you would want to see suggests that those of us who expect that from those who are in the church and practice Christianity are basically very naive. That is what it tells us.
It is good for the church. You can tell why it's good for the church.
You tell me why.
I feel, this is my feeling, that an older bishop will be able to train somebody. They will got like a train somebody coming along, like a deputy coming along. And they should, the laity can step back and say, well, listen, let the older one go forward.
No, but the laity is operating on the premise that their choice for bishop has got what it takes to lead the Anglican Church into a new era. They are concerned about the ground that has been lost. They need to energize young people, and obviously they believe that this person has got what it takes, and that the reform that is necessary for the church can only come about through this person rather than the older one. That's their judgment.
But no, I was told from some person high up in the Anglican Church that the same youngster was supposed to be the leader of the youth committee, and he didn't get the young people in church.
Yeah, but young people in the church may not be the only factor you're looking at. You know, the leadership of the church requires more than just reaching out to young people. And I think, you know, sometimes when you look at this whole question of succession, who comes next is influenced by who was there before. You don't think? In other words, if I look at the United States right now, I would suggest to you that having Barack Obama serve 2 terms as president of the United States has helped to usher in Donald Trump. As difficult as it is to accept, you know, because what happens there is that there is a reaction. And, you know, trust me, the presidency of Trump is going to produce a Democrat the likes of which you haven't seen before.
I like Trump, though, you know?
And what do you like about Trump, though?
Well, listen, I like Trump, do as you like, and then say fake news. to be honest, I want a good idea, though, but I find we getting close to that, too. We here and Bob is getting close to that. But I personally say, want this Anglican thing sort out. You can't give us some ideas out there and get sort out?
I can pray for them.
But them should be able to pray for me. But that means that prayer ain't going for. Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Thank you. We pray for a solution. Rather than having this matter go to the House of Bishops, and then we have to settle for somebody that, you know, from who doesn't know our environment as well, and then that person comes in, and that they could also face a lot of resistance as a result, perhaps more resistance than either of the two candidates that we have right now. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Yes. I hope that our conversation will be nice today.
Well, that depends on you.
Okay, then. Now, just over a year ago, I called and I had a nice conversation with you. And I told you that something worried me in the 14 years of the Baptist Labour Party control of Barbados. I felt that the person who was in charge of Barbados between 94 and 2001, I don't believe that person was in charge between 2001 and the 31st of December 2007. You remember that conversation you and I had?
I don't remember a lot of things that you and I talk
now,
about.
I returned to this country in 2006. But I follow politics, not only Barbados politics. And I follow Barbados politics to think. Only after, between 94 and 2001, and he had, and things had continued up to that stage where he was at that time, he and Barrow would be head-to-head as the two greatest leaders in Barbados.
So where's the evidence that he wasn't in charge?
This is what I'm saying. I follow Barbados from 2001 going on. And to me, it reminds me of a cricket team that have a captain but have a favorite within the team. That is my opinion. I could be wrong.
So what's the evidence of that? I don't know what you're saying.
You don't know the evidence?
You have your opinion, but support
you know,
it with evidence.
I told you before, this is my opinion, not now, over a year ago.
Sir, I have a difficulty with you having an opinion. All I'm asking
yes.
you to do is
what
to support it.
What I'm saying is that what is going on, what I'm hearing now, which is very, very serious. I hear some people trying to make it sound easy and want to form a cabinet and thing. For the last 3 or 4 years, I was saying about corruption. This body got a car, the next body got a car, the Guado. I was saying about all types of corruption. Now, this situation we have going on right now, I believe, this is my belief, that Mr. Arthur had to know. I don't believe that he ain't know. One. And I believe the cabinet also know what happened. And I don't believe that Barbadians should take it lightly.
I don't know. Look, you just segued from you were hearing about corruption in the recent past. And now you have moved from there to go back to the period where the Labour Party was in office. I don't know that we are in any position to link the two. And you have laid no foundation for any such suggestion. And I'm not going to stay there with you on this because I will state categorically right now that I have heard nothing that is being discussed right now that I can safely say falls within the realm of corruption in
all
the period.
Wrongdoing?
No, I am not going to go there with you. Listen to me. Let me tell you something. Because you know they got a lot of trigger-happy people.
Oh, let's move from there.
They got a lot of trigger-happy people around
let's
here.
Let's move from there. Let's move from
and
there.
And I don't want you to come and put us in any trouble.
Why, Mr. Ellis, I can ask you this.
I have heard of allegations of corruption. And let me back it up by saying this. In 2008, in that election campaign, there were a lot of allegations about what you would describe as wrongdoing. To this day, nothing has been taken forward to substantiate all of these charges that were made back then.
Okay, let's
and I would expect that if you are going to make allegations along those lines,
I'm not
lines,
making no allegations.
Not
Ellen.
You. Any group of people who make
what
those
I'm
allegations and form the government of the country, then the logical thing to do is to follow it up.
I'm not contending this. All I'm saying that this one is clearer than anyone I ever.
Well, I don't. It's clear to you because you know, you have your own thoughts, but those thoughts have not or cannot be shared with the public in the way that you want to, because you know that they have the potential to run us into trouble.
But may I ask you a question, Ms. Ellis?
You can ask me anything.
Before I move to my next point,
you can ask me anything.
How come that we was discussing who got care and they didn't pay for it and there's how all that was debate from this station openly calling people names?
Everything is based upon the context in which it is delivered.
No, there was no proof to those things neither.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is that I am not aware that we have allowed people to get away with making that
yes,
wild accusations.
Dr. Lowe and Michael Lashley was land based on this station.
On this station? On this station?
But I saw, especially by Mr. Wickham, and he would like to drive one of them cars and say, Mr. Ellis, I listen to Bastards every day.
No, I don't listen every day.
But let's move on. Let me get this new one in that you could get someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear the leader of the opposition in connection with, I don't want to go into details directly, that it repaired in 30 years? You know where they're going? You heard that? You heard her voice discussing taxes and then it would be paid?
What's your point?
No, I asked if you heard it.
I can't remember the specifics, so tell me what you're specifically referring to.
No, what I was told, listening to her voice, taxes owed by the law firm would be paid in 30 years. They kept saying they can pay it when they feel like. You ain't heard that? You ain't hear it?
The truth of the matter is that even if a person, if she's made the comment, because I know that last night at the Democratic Labour Party meeting, they were playing a piece of her voice talking about this matter of taxes owed by the firm, the law firm to which she belongs. At the end of the day, I would expect that a person will either negotiate with the relevant authority, and they cannot unilaterally determine what they are going to do. You would accept that?
I understand, but I say that to say this.
To say what?
Mr. Fanderstraw is a gentleman who I can tell to say he do not speak well enough for me. But I wish that Miss Motley could divide the amount of time she speaks in half and give him. She's taught too much.
That's your opinion. And
no,
you know, that's your opinion.
I did for someone.
That's your opinion. And I don't know what that got to do with this issue of the 30-year theory that you talk about. As I said just now, you just hold on. Hold on. Because I tell you already, this is not a place for us to be promoting and demoting individual
this
candidates.
Is not promoting, Ms. Ellis.
Yes, I'm telling you it is. It is promoting or demoting, and I'm not really.
Oh.
Well, you're advocating subtly. You're involved in the process of trying to promote or pull down one person or the other, and I don't think that we need to go there. Anyhow, the point I'm making to you is
that. Why
don't you listen? Let me speak, because you make it seem as though we are in contention when you butt in every time I have something to say, and then it becomes quarrelsome.
That is not true, Miss Ellis.
Well, you will have ample time to respond.
Okay,
but the courteous thing to do is for me to let you speak, and then you let me speak. That's the way to deal with it. All right. So my point to you is, no person in Barbados who owes taxes to the government of Barbados can unilaterally determine over what period and how much they are going to pay back. That would have to be discussed and negotiated with the relevant authorities. And therefore, I leave that there. All right?
I agree with you, Ms. Ellis.
Thank you very much. Let's move on. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well.
Yeah, but I'm good, too. I'm good, too, myself. There's a couple things I would like to look at with you, right? The time before last that we was talking, we were looking at some projects. Can I hear you say that some projects last Wednesday night left you in awe?
I wasn't
so
in
like,
awe. Don't put no words in my mouth. I was not in awe. I said that I was not aware. I didn't even stop to think of some of those projects. I didn't say it was in awe.
All right, Mr. Ellis. We ain't getting in the argument. You can leave that there.
Good.
Anyhow, Mr. Ellis, right now, we are within touching distance of the election. And I must say that I am disappointed with the program.
Which program?
Because this program.
Mm-hmm.
Because instead of lengthening it, the program, we shorten it. Right now, you expected that we would get in a little more time. We're getting in less time. Second thing, normally we just have a political analyst for one day. Now we get any for none. Which in that, I would think that this would be the head time that we would need him. Next thing, we got a record number of parties, a record number of candidates, both for the parties and even a record number for independents. And we get no polls at all. So that's a record too, that we have in no polls, the head time that we got the most candidates around. You could tell me what could be responsible for that.
I think you are smart enough to recognize all the factors that could influence that.
No, what I recognized long ago, even said I was smart, is that polling at plus or minus 5 isn't relevant anymore.
Okay, that's
your assessment. And that is why that nobody ain't taking them, you see, and they try to force them to say what they want them to say. And okay. I said that long ago, that the pollster shoot polling in its foot, and now he bring it to its deathbed. Bring it to its deathbed.
Well, you know, that's one way of looking at it. But I think that at the end of it all, one of the major challenges that you face in doing polling is that you look at cost-benefit analysis. What's the cost of doing a poll, and what's the benefit of doing it?
Mr. Ellis, I think that at this time, that what you should get more benefits out of it, and the cost could be shared among...
So why you don't go and do the poll then?
But I tried to get some numbers from Mr. Wickham. After what it would cost, because...
Come on, give me a break. You got between now and next Wednesday. So why you don't go to call him privately? Because you know where he lives?
Mr. Ellis,
give him a call and tell him that you got a group of people willing to finance the poll.
I told him all of that on the radio. And I told you...
But call him privately. You can't negotiate a discussion like that on radio.
Mr. Ellis, long ago you offered to give me his number. And I told you the only place I can deal with him is... And the calling program.
Man, you're trying to escape from...
I'm not escaping from anything, Mr. Ellis. I'm not escaping from
If you are serious about getting a poll done, and you're going to put your money where your mouth is, or get some other people to put their money where your mouth is, then I am sure that Mr. Wickham would be willing to discuss that matter with you.
Well, I was discussing it with him, and he wasn't willing to discuss it to me.
Because he didn't take you seriously. He just thought that you weren't going to put up any money.
Don't speak for him. But I might not go put up. I can get it.
But go and get it. You got time. You have time.
No. You don't know where he got from where.
You have time.
Don't bother with that. Anyhow, I think that we should be tripping over one another to get polls done. And we ain't, because we ain't satisfied that plus or minus 5 could cut it.
All right.
Anyhow, a fella, while he was out and while he was driving, coming in the van, I hear a fella come on, and he was annoyed at the way that Mr. Martley was treated, and he was annoyed, right? And he gave Mr. Arthur some advice, because he was saying that Mr. Arthur shouldn't have opened his mouth, and you say that he was baited.
I said that. Not me.
He was dared. No, I think he was baited, or he was dared to say something. Remember that?
I never said that. I don't recall making...
We can listen back to it.
I do not remember making any such comment about baiting.
Mr. Ellis, something was...
Somebody else said that. The caller said that, not me.
Anyhow, Mr. Ellis, he was baited, or he was put in a corner, but he had to come and defend himself. And the fellow was saying that he should not. No, you're...
And I asked the man... I put a question to the man. I did not say that anybody was baited.